God himself will be with them. What a great verse. Lo, the tabernacle of God is with humanity, and he will be tabernacling with them, and they will be his peoples, and God himself will be with them. Good morning, Martin Zender here. You know that's a figure of speech. God himself will be with them because God is invisible, but his presence will be much more immediate and intimate than it is in this life. You know how it is in this life. You feel God is so distant. Well, I don't want you to feel that way anymore. Based on what I told you yesterday, the consummations of the eons have attained to us. This eon probably, even eon 5, is going to get better and better and better. But we don't need to wait for that, because in spirit we apprehend this truth that God is dwelling with us. It's not like it was in Israel. My goodness. Ah, he is a present help. I know that's an Old Testament verse. So since it's an Israel verse, it's not even as intimate as God is with us. A present help? What is this? It's like God's my co-pilot. He's helping me. No, it's far more than that. You know that old saying, God is my co-pilot. I did see one decent Christian bumper sticker said, if God is my co-pilot, if God is your co-pilot, you better switch seats. That's what this thing said. I thought that was pretty good. If God is your co-pilot, you better switch seats. It's more than that. God is, it's like every breath we take, every move we make, it's God is indwelling. The Spirit of God makes its home in us. There it is. Wow, I finally got it out. Spirit of God makes its home in us. This is far more intimate than Israel visiting him at the temple. And so here's a great thing at the consummation of the eons that will attain to us. God making his home in us. I remember A.E. Knox saying that the best gift he had was his God consciousness. And nobody could take that away from him. It's this knowledge that no matter where you are, no matter what you do, no matter where you go, no matter what you think, your life is inhabited by God. And it's no longer this duplicity of thinking that, well, there's me and then there's God. What would Jesus do? What would Jesus do? See, that's a total Israelite thought. Yeah, it has Jesus out here, you here, and you're following in the footsteps of the man, Christ Jesus. Well, how much better is it that Christ's Spirit and God's Spirit makes its home in us? This is an anticipation in spirit of the reality on the new earth. The physical reality of God dwelling with humanity. Now, as you know, I want to get into this clamoring and mourning. I hate mourning. Here I go again. I'm going to start talking about mourning. I talked about tears yesterday. I'm going to talk about mourning right now. Apparently, I wasn't planning on it. I still want to talk about this bride as a bride adorned for her husband. There is so much truth there, not only concerning Israel, but concerning the, you know, men and women, and why women are so beautiful and everything. I love that truth, as you know. But let's talk about mourning right now. Let's talk about funerals. Let's talk about the loss of loved ones, because I think a lot of you are going through this. I told you that as I watched my friend Nancy go under general anesthesia, it reminded me of death, and it was a terrible thing, and I cried. So there was, in a sense, mourning and tears at the same time. Every tear will be removed from their eyes. The very next verse is telling here in verse 4 of the unveiling 21. And verse 4 says, every tear will be removed from their eyes, and death will be no more. That's going to be a really huge reason why there are no more tears, because I think almost all our tears are related either directly or indirectly to death, whether it's the apprehension of the reality of death, or the dread of coming death, or seeing a loved one die. These things produce tears in us, but death is going to be no more. Now, your question might be, I'm anticipating this, don't worry, I'm going to get to it, Martin, the second death is still in existence. That's true, but there is no more dying. But Martin, you said that there are mortals on the new earth. Okay, but you're tough. You're not being easy on me today, and I appreciate that. Take me to the limit. Push me. Push me. Make me go the extra millimeter. people are still dying, but they're not entering the death state anymore. Therefore, if the new earth is 10,000 years long, then people will live 10,000 years. Even mortal people will live 10,000 years because they're receiving healing from the leaves of the tree of life growing in along the river of life in the new Jerusalem. So don't worry about that. So that's a huge improvement on the millennial earth, because in the millennial earth, people will still be dying. Remember, there's a verse that says, a man of 100 will be considered but a youth. That tells me that he's still going to die. He's just young. Your teenage years are your centenarian years. You turn 100, it's the equivalent of today turning 13. This guy turned 100, you know, so now he can show his ID and get a drink on the new earth. Can I see your ID? You know, you have to be 100 years old to drink the beer flowing from the river of life. Maybe it's the river of beer. I don't know. The point being that, no, that's on the new earth. Yeah, that analogy should have been applied to the millennial earth. Sorry about that. Will there be beer on the millennial earth? That's a good question. Yes, Jesus said he would not drink wine again until he drank it with his disciples in the kingdom. So that's the first thing going to happen when Jesus is reunited with his disciples. Oh, there's going to be one heck of a wine fest there. And I'm coming down for that. I don't know if I told you. I'm coming down for that. Because that's going to be the best tasting wine ever. And so if there's wine, there's beer. Where there's wine, there's beer. That's my saying. And so, yes, there's going to be beer on the new earth. I mean, on the millennial earth. Don't let me get those confused. Because there's still death on the millennial earth, but not on the new earth. So it's mourning. It's grief, and that's the worst pang in the world. You know that 40,000 people approximately die every single day. Before I finish my sentence, there's another dozen people gone. And the grave is not satisfied, said the wise man, Solomon. And people are mourning every day. Some of the most heart-wrenching photographs I see are those of people grieving, their faces rent in anguish, kneeling over the body of a dead or slain loved one. And people are experiencing it now. People are waking up this morning and that pit is hitting their stomach that their child or their parent or their brother or their sister is gone. Gone. That's the horror of death, is that people no longer are. And it's a shock, isn't it, when someone who is near to you, you walk with every day, you speak to every day, and suddenly they're gone, and there's a huge emptiness and vacuum in your life, and this vacuum just pulls the tears out of you, and that's called mourning. Mourning concerns death, mourning. I used to think that the mourning dove was mourning, because you heard them in the morning. No, it's mourning, M-O-U-R, and because the doves sound like they're grieving, they're sad. Because this is what is pulled out of us in the wake of the absence of life. This is going to be eliminated. No more mourning on the new earth. Why? Because there's not going to be any more funerals. Sorry, if you're an undertaker, you're going to have to find a new line of work on the new earth. Any morticians, undertakers, gravediggers, Hallmark's going to lose an entire line of cards, namely the sympathy card. It's going to be obsolete. No need for it on the new earth. And I'm damn glad of it, because nobody hates death worse than I do. Yeah, I'll go ahead and stick with that. And so this is why people mourning the pain of death won't be doing it anymore, because there won't be any more death, nor clamor. There's not going to be any mourning, nor clamor, nor misery. Misery makes me miserable. I hate misery. Misery has you writhing. There's another thing that we do to vent. Yesterday I spoke about laughing. I spoke about tears. Now we're speaking of today, we're speaking of mourning, which go hand in hand with tears, and misery. It's a separate thing, or else it wouldn't be mentioned. Misery is not necessarily tied to death, but it's something that makes you convulse, and your stomach just feels like it's literally tied in knots, and the pain so overcomes you, and it's called misery, that you want to die. This is why many people commit suicide, because they're what? They're miserable. Why is my life so miserable? Oh, the weather is miserable. Misery belongs to now. It will be modified, much, much reduced in the fourth eon. It will be eliminated. I hardly even imagine this. It's going to be eliminated on the new earth. And you know, I'm not going to talk about any of this stuff without mentioning 1 Corinthians 10:11, bringing it to us. The consummations of the eons have attained to us. So the elimination of misery is the elimination of it, the total eradication of that thing called misery. We can't even imagine such a thing. Right now, misery exists for the express purpose of causing us to appreciate the opposite of misery, which is glee. Glee, happiness, bubbly, giddiness. Giddiness, not a mere contentment, but giddiness, where you can't contain your happiness and you do strange things like tittering, like or laughing in strange and unaccountable ways. Some people's laughs drive me nuts. They almost like they're barking. Wah, wah. No, that's the penguin. It sounds like the penguin in Batman. It's embarrassing, actually. Some people's laughter is embarrassing. But I don't begrudge them that. As embarrassing as it is, I enjoy it. Some laughter I enjoy more than others. But misery, I can't hardly stand to see. It's the opposite. The opposite of all these things. It's a curling up in a ball and pain that can barely be endured. That's going to be no more. Why? For the former things passed away. Former things. The thing is, we're now living in the time that in the future will be called former. But one of the reasons God took the Apostle John into the new earth is that he could send back a report. Unfortunately, we weren't given the same courtesy for our own Apostle Paul, who went into the third heaven and came back with nothing. Oh yeah, Paul says, I saw things that were incredibly beautiful. I heard things that were ineffably wonderful, and yet I can't tell you anything about it because I'm not permitted to. Step aside then, will you? Bring John into the room. Because here's a man who not only went onto the new earth. Well, did he go into the new earth? If he did, he went into the Lord's Day, which is the second earth, the fourth eon. But he definitely, at the least, looked into the new earth, and he was allowed to describe it. And now I'm marrying this revelation of John, that there's going to be no more death, no more mourning, no more clamor, no more misery. I didn't speak much about clamor. It's just noise. Let me tell you, the worst noise in the world, let me try to imitate it here, to me, is when you take like a metal fork and it goes against a dish. This noise drives me nuts. In fact, just this morning, I'm trying to be very quiet. I get up in the morning, I try to creep like a nun because I don't want to wake up anybody in the household. And I was up at 4:15 this morning starting the newsletter. And there were some dishes left over. Don't tell Juliana I said that because she's embarrassed. She tries to get all the dishes cleaned at night, but she didn't last night. Anyway, there was a fork sitting next to a metal pan, metal fork, metal pan. And I just moved something half an inch and it clinked. And I thought, that really ticked me off. That was clamor. It was clamor. So back in the day, back in the good old Bible days, it was stone pots. And they transported their food from the stone pot into their mouth via a piece of bread, which was brilliant. It didn't make any noise. Nowadays, we have this, that's not good enough. We have this clamoring. Yes. Oh, here's a metal thing. Here's a metal glass. Not good enough. That's plastic. Where's clamoring when you need it? Anyway, I hate the sound of clinking dishes, clinking metal things. It drives me nuts. I like the soft sound of stoneware, the soft sound of bread. If you take a stone pot and you tap it against a stone cup, it makes a gentle little clink. Okay, and why I'm holding a jar that was given to me, a ceramic jar, why do they take this beautiful stone thing and coat it with this shiny thing that makes it clink when it meets something made of metal? It's infuriating to me. It's clamorous. Why do people drive down my road with motorcycles where there's no discernible muffler? I don't understand that. It's like, I can't even imitate the sound and I wouldn't want to do it. It's too disturbing. It drives me crazy. And I curse under my breath and above it at such clamor. Get a freaking muffler. And yet, it's a weakness in humanity, especially the male version of humanity, that must be so inadequate in itself that it has to make up for some inadequacy somewhere, that it must remove the muffler and must travel through the neighborhood sounding like World War freaking IV, sound this internal combustion engine from hell. It's unleashed and it rattles the globe, the world, the neighborhood, my ears, and it's clamor, and I can't stand it. My mom told me, I distinctly remember this. I was so young that I was able to be held in my mother's arms, and I remember a motorcycle going down the road, and I would cry every time a motorcycle went by. I don't cry anymore. I cuss. That's what I do now instead of crying. It's much more mature, you see. I've grown up. But clamoring, whether it's dishes, silverware made of metal, or motorcycles without mufflers, cars without mufflers. Oh, you're such a man. You make so much There's one now. I don't know if you can hear it. I just heard something coming. You're such a man that you need this to make up for your inadequacies. No, everything's going to be so adequate on Eon 5 that not even macho men will need to travel in unmufflered vehicles. It's going to be muffle heaven on the new earth, and you can better believe I'm going to visit it.